Robert Crosby has taught us to listen to what is said and what is heard, so it does not go out the other ear. Today is June the 25th, 2017. It's an auspicious moment in the history of the Theosophical teachings brought to us by HPB and WUJ. Brought to us in the last quarter of the 19th century. From those referred to by them as masters of wisdom, perfected human beings. For the sake of the promulgation under the name of the Theosophical Movement, we, with profound gratitude and humility, honor one who had the power to appear as nothing in the eyes of men. Yet he's known to all of us as the friendly philosopher, R.C., or Robert Crosby. He was born, as stated, June the 25th. He was born earlier, January the 10th, 1849, in Montreal, Canada, and as was stated, he gave up his body on June the 25th, 1919, and ever since, a special day has been set aside, as was said, not to commemorate his passing, for he lives, but to honor his living testament, ULT, its mission and its future, and his important position in the early 20th century to pass on the teachings of Theosophy as recorded in the writings of HPB and WQ Judge. I repeat, pass on the teachings of Theosophy as recorded in the writings of HPB and WQJ. It is Robert Crosby that we are indebted to for the preservation of the teachings of those called the Masters of Wisdom, collected and preserved. Yes, in what is known as photographic copies. I repeat, exactly, not written over, but photographic copies of their teachings. It is important for us to remember that. But by being aware of and familiar with the selflessness of Mr. Crosby, he would have said, study well the importance of ULT, its mission and its future. Go on with the work. There is much recorded of his early days and in connection with the Theosophical Movement. He attended a Theosophical meeting in Boston, where he met WQJ in 1887. After they met face-to-face, Mr. Judge was noted to have said to Crosby, "You are on my list." Please note, you are on my list. He was advised to write HPB, and the rest is history of ULT International. The Declaration. To spread broadcast the teachings of Theosophy as recorded in the writings of HPB, or H.P. Blavatsky, and William Q. Judge. This wonderful little article has on the back of it, the policy of this lodge is independent devotion to the cause of Theosophy without professing attachment to any Theosophical organization. is loyal to the great family of Theosophical Movement, but does not concern itself with dissension or differences of individual members. Our study showed there was quite a bit of that after HPB and WQ Judge had left the seat. So we owe our presence here, and also several lodges listed here, to Robert Crosby. We just have one or few more words to say. And then his last words, be theosophist, work for theosophy. Stick to the message. Unite, if that is the desire. Go on with the work. This was very brief. And if you attend our library, you'll get an even more detailed explanation of the part that Mr. Crosby has played in carrying on the work of the Theosophical Movement, today known as the United Lodge of Theosophy. We have no more to say at this point in time, but there will be several readings coming up now, and then after those readings are done, there will be a short talk. ULT, its mission and future. The words of the silence that existed in this room before we began. Our words about not a question.
From the writings of Robert Crosby. Where shall we find the true foundation for a changed civilization that all men and women can see and stand on? It is not philosophies, not religions, nor political panaceas that are needed, but knowledge and a wider scope of vision than the vicissitudes of one short physical life. The knowledge that is greater than all the forms of religion ever invented is the knowledge of the very nature of man himself, for himself, and in himself. For we are not here as things apart. We are here because of one great sustaining cause, infinite and omnipresent, not separate from us nor from any other being. It is the same in all beings above the human and in all beings below the human. The very root of our natures, the very man himself. It is the source of all powers and of all actions, whether good or evil. Then everything that is done by beings affects all beings, and all that it has been caused by beings, each one affected according to his share in the cause. What the past has been, we are experiencing now. Our lives now being but repetitions of lives that preceded them. What the future will be, we are making now. We are going to have a League of Humanity only when the ancient truths of the wisdom religion are once more perceived, when there is one purpose and one teaching. Its truths are self-evident, not to be accepted because written in some book, nor because they are the dicta of some particular church. They are the only truth worth considering because in the use of them, they prove themselves true. And truth, as we ought to know, always explains. When we have the explanation, we have the truth. Each one has to make his own verification of the truth. But the fact remains that there is truth, and it has always existed. It has come to us from beings higher than we, because once they turned their faces in the right direction and pursued the course pointed out to them.
These are selections from H.P.V. Blavatsky's writings. The wisdom religion is the inheritance of all the nations the world over. Theosophy is as old as the world in its teachings and ethics, if not in name. Its aims are several, but the most important of all are those which are likely to lead to the relief of human suffering under any or every form, moral as well as physical. And we believe that the former to be far more important than the latter. Theosophy as inculcated ethics. It is to purify the soul. If it would relieve the physical body, whose ailments, save causes of accidents, are all hereditary. It is not by studying occultism for selfish ends that one can reach the true goal, that of helping suffering mankind. As mankind is essentially of one and the same essence, and that essence is one, infinite, uncreated, and eternal, whether we call it God or nature, nothing, therefore, can affect one nation or one man without affecting all other nations and all other men. This is as certain and obvious as that the stone thrown into a pond will, sooner or later, set in motion every single drop of water therein. It is an occult law that no man can rise superior to his individual failings without lifting, be it ever so little, the whole body of which he has an intricate part. In the same way, no one can sin nor suffer the effect of sin alone. All pain and suffering are results of want of harmony, and the one terrible and only cause of disturbance of harmony is selfishness in the same form or another. Hence, karma gives back to every man the actual consequences of his own actions without any regard to their moral character. But since he received his due for all, it is obvious that he will be made to atone for all suffering which he has caused. Just as he will reap in joy and gladness the fruits of all the happiness and harmony he has helped to produce. The masters require only that each shall do his best, and above all, that each shall strive in reality to feel himself one with his fellow workers. It is not a dull agreement on intellectual questions or an impossible inability as to all details of work that is needed, but a true and hearty, earnest devotion to our cause, which will lead each to help his brother to the utmost of his power to work for the cause, whether or not we agree as to the exact method of carrying out the work. The only man who is absolutely wrong in his method is one who does nothing. Make men feel and recognize in their innermost hearts what is their real, true duty to all men, and every old absurd abuse of power, every inquisitious law in the national policy based on human, social, or political selfishness will disappear of itself.
From the writings of William Q. Judge. How man has come to be the complex being that he is, and why, are questions that neither science nor religion makes conclusive answer to. This immortal thinker, having such vast powers and possibilities, all his because of his intimate connection with every secret part of nature from which he has been built up, stands at the top of an immense and silent evolution. He asks why nature exists, what the drama of life has for his aim, how that aim may be attained. But science and religion both fail to give a reasonable reply. Science does not pretend to be able to give the solution, saying that the examination of things as they are is enough of a task. Religion offers an explanation both illogical and unmeaning, and acceptable but to the bigot, as it requires us to consider the whole of nature as a mystery and to seek the meaning and purpose of life with all its sorrow in the pleasure of a God who cannot be found out. What then is the universe for, and for what final purpose is man, the immortal thinker, here in evolution? It is all for the experience of raising the entire mass of manifested matter up to the stature, nature, and dignity of conscious godhood. The great aim is to reach self-consciousness, not through a race or tribe or some favored nation, but by and through the perfecting after transformation of the whole mass of matter, as well as what we now call soul. Nothing is to be left out. The aim for present man is his initiation into complete knowledge, and for the other kingdoms below him, that they may be raised up gradually from stage to stage to be, in time, initiated also. This is evolution carried to its highest power. It is a significant, it is a magnificent prospect. It makes of man a god and gives to every part of nature the possibility of being one day the same. There is strength and nobility in it, for by this no man is dwarfed and belittled, for no one is so originally sinful that he cannot rise above all sin. Treated from the materialistic position of science, evolution takes in but half of life, while the religious conception of it is a mixture of nonsense and fear. present religions keep the element of fear, and at the same time imagine that an almighty being can think of no other earth but this, and has to govern this one very imperfectly. But the old theosophical view makes the universe a vast, complete, and perfect whole. The great problems of life, why we are here, why we suffer, and where may justice be found, press upon us. It is life and its sorrows that destroy our peace, and every human heart wants to know the reason for it. We must therefore offer theories that will give the answer, and these theories are the great doctrines of karma and reincarnation. There is a mysterious power in these doctrines, which at last forces them upon the belief of those who take them up for study. It is due to the fact that the ego itself, the experiencer of rebirth and karma, that has within a clear recollection of both, and rejoices, as it were, when it finds the lower mind taking them up for study.
From the writings of Robert Crosby, a friendly philosopher. Theosophy is in the world to present the means by which each one can acquire knowledge for himself. Its study and application call forth the judgment and discrimination latent in the man himself. We must seek to give aid to all in search of truth. Our value and aid in this great work will be just what we make them by our motive, our judgment, our conduct. The heartfelt desire that others may benefit from our lives will be felt by those open. It matters little how few. They may be the means of awakening many others. It is the effort and the sacrifice that bring the ultimate results, but in our zeal, it is well to consider what the masters have done and do year after year, age after age. They do what they can, when they can, and as they can, in accordance with cyclic law. They conserve the knowledge gained and wait. Knowing this and doing thus, there can be no room in us for doubt or discouragement. Theosophy is for those who want it. We are to hold, wait, and work for those few earnest souls who will grasp the plan and further the cause. In the work we have undertaken together, it matters not whether we fail or succeed. Our purpose has been and will be that the work shall go on. It is then to the teachings that attention has to be called, not to ourselves, who are only handing them on as best we can. ULT, the United Lodge of Theosophists, is a name given to certain principles and ideas. Those who associate themselves with those principles and ideas are attracted and bound by them only. The basis of successful work is unity. This is an age of transition, and our work is to hark back to first principles, promulgate and sustain them as best we can, so that they shall be ready for those who need them, drawing our inspiration from the message and the messengers. The course of ULT will be what its associates make it, no more, no less. Its basis for unity is purposely left undefined from the exoteric, the personal point of view, in order to make more prominent the true and lasting basis for unity among all who call themselves theosophist. We are all links in the great chain of the theosophical movement. What affects one affects all, and in degree. Everyone who endeavors to help others in any real way puts himself in the position where he must take the reactions. The karma of the present Theosophical Society is that of HPB and Mr. Judge, known by them beforehand in a general way. It is also our karma and that of all other theosophists. We and all other true students are linked with the Great Lodge by aspiration, by service, by following the Master's program as nearly as we know.
Good morning. So we endeavor today to put forth some ideas along the lines of that great mission of the ULT and its future. How is that? Well, the mission of the ULT, United Lodge of Theosophists, very simply is to, very simply, just to keep before the public the teachings of theosophy as recorded in the writings of H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge. And we regard theosophy very specifically as that body of knowledge. There's a value to that. The reason why it's so important to focus on what this body of knowledge is, and therefore what this body of knowledge isn't, is because what can happen by people who are looking for, to draw attention to themselves, is people start to say that anything can be theosophy. And if we look out into the world, we all know on the internet, there's a lot that's put forth as theosophy, which is ridiculous. And so we have to keep the teachings pure. Why is it important to focus on these two teachers? Well, there's a reason that the Theosophical movement came into being. It was decided by who? The Lodge of Perfected Beings, a Lodge of Masters, that the world was at a certain place in a certain time along an intersection of certain cycles, where the time was right to bring these teachings forth again. And HPB was chosen to be the messenger, the direct messenger, or the direct agent of the Lodge of Masters. And we are told that there would not be another human being for centuries that had the capacity to do what she did when she did it. So what is the purpose? Why did these teachings have to be brought about then? Well, if we look just historically through the Dark Ages and how the Western world was working its way out of the challenges of the Dark Ages through the Renaissance, through the Reformation, into the Enlightenment period, what was seen is that a decidedly materialistic tack was being taken in the consciousness of the people, and that was a reaction to false ideas that were being put out by religions, per se, by religions of the world. And it was holding people back. So in the 19th century, one could look into the 20th century and see some real problems and the degradation of society if spiritual ideas were not infused into the Western consciousness. And to do so, the Western consciousness had to be, what had to be taught was how to unlearn certain false ideas. That was a priority. And so what theosophy primarily is here to teach is the idea of what God is not, because really, who can really learn what God is? What theosophy is here to teach is ideas that you are not born in original sin, you are not inherently an original sinner, and to have that frame of mind condemns the individual into thinking he's something he's not, into thinking that he's a weak, miserable sinner. The ideas of God that are given out by theosophy, very simply, of the divine, is that it is ever-present, it is infinitely accessible, it is within every being and every atom that is, and it is unknowable. More than that, though, it is not a personal being who decides who he likes and who he doesn't like. It's not a personal being who decides what books you should read, what books you shouldn't. He doesn't decide whether or not you should go to this place on Sunday or that place on Saturday and worship whoever. It simply is the divine presence, omnipotently omnipresent. That's first. And so if that's the case, if it's not a being telling us what to do or expecting us what to do, then when man asks, well, why do I have these situations? Why do I have these circumstances? Why do I have these problems? Then it's either due to chance or bad luck or good luck, or what theosophy teaches, everything happens under law. Everything happens under law according to the law of cause and effect. So that means that the law of karma, the law of cause and effect, it's all about the individual, and it puts the responsibility for everything that happens to us and for everything that we choose to do, it puts the responsibility on us. Each man has the power to undo the problems that he created for himself, and those problems, whether the individual karma or the karma with the family, the nation, or the race that he is infinitely interconnected with, it is up to the individual to work through those problems. So the teaching of karma means that you are held responsible under universal law for everything you do and you think. Your karmic slate doesn't get wiped clean. And the result of that is, if people realize I'm responsible for everything I send out comes back, be not deceived, God is not mocked, whatever you reap, you shall sow. Well, that means whatever you're sowing right now, you've reaped in the past. The teaching, the masters know that the teaching of this to the human mind is the basis for ethics. And furthermore, that we are not our physical bodies, but we are immortal souls. And immortal souls will continue to have the opportunity to learn all the lessons that this world has to offer for as many lives as it takes to reach the perfection, the inherent ability to perfect oneself in this period of evolution. So these are the basic ideas of theosophy, and the purpose for teaching them is to correct the false ideas that I'm not responsible for me, God is, that this person will save me, or if I do this ridiculous act, I'll end up in heaven because that's what God wants me to do. The basis for all these things is religion, and that's the problem. It's irresponsibly following the dictates of false ideas. So the movement that we're talking about, that the ULT is inherently part of the theosophical movement, when one participates in this movement through the United Lodge of Theosophists, one is not a member of a club. You're not joining a group, an organization. Rather, because that's a thing, that's a physical thing. Rather, if one finds that one is in sympathy with the ideas of the ancient wisdom religion, then one might choose to associate himself with that movement. When we associate ourselves with a movement and contribute to the movement, it's all about the ideas. It's all about contributing to the ideas. It has nothing to do with the personality, has nothing to do with opportunities for making money or gaining power or all of these things. It's not a matter of turning this thing into a religion with churches. It's a matter of teaching ideas. And how we do that is through the means in the United Lodge of Theosophy, by having a similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching. This similarity of aim, purpose, and teaching is not an idea that Mr. Crosby came up with. It's really given out by the founders. It's so important for all theosophists to have a common aim, which quite frankly is simply to form the nucleus of a universal brotherhood, to recognize that regardless of our differences, even if you don't think we're brothers, really we are. So it's up to the individual to investigate why and how it is that brotherhood is the reality, and the mistaken notion that we're not one family is the false idea. These ideas have to be overcome. The purpose for doing this, we talk about the aim, purpose, and the teaching. The purpose for doing this is to contribute to the evolution of all of mankind, to contribute to the evolution of all the kingdoms of nature below us, with which we are all infinitely interconnected. So the teaching is very important. The teaching as given out by H.P. Blavatsky and William Q. Judge is a portion, theosophy as given out in 1875, is a portion of the ancient wisdom religion, and is a portion, as presented, is, we are told, is the most complete presentment of the philosophy that can be conceived by the human mind at this period of evolution. So in our effort to promulgate these teachings, the basic teachings of theosophy, the ethics, there has to be a unity. And the challenge was that the unity was in large part when the Theosophical Society started having its problems, the unity was lost. The unity of the aim, the purpose, and teaching was lost. Now, we'll give an example, we'll give an analogy of what was going on at the time. The analogy is there was struggles. There were struggles by personalities and organizations and who was going to maintain control. Why was it necessary for the ULT to be established? We'll get to the analogy in a minute. But it's because with the passing of Madame Blavatsky, Mr. Judge was left, and there was a misconception among many theosophists at the time that Mr. Judge was HPB's successor. The idea of being a successor is a false idea, because the idea of successorship is that one can confer one's power onto another person, and then this second person is as powerful and has all the power that the first person had. It's simply not true. Whatever one chooses to do with his life, it's a matter of doing the work and evolving oneself to work on yourself for the benefit of others is the purpose that theosophy is given out. If it's for anything other than for benefit of others, to contribute to the universal brotherhood of man, you're in the wrong place for the wrong reason. So this idea of successorship people at the time thought Mr. Judge was the successor of HBD, and she passed in 91, Mr. Judge passed in 96. But really, he simply had his position. He was, as HBB says, a part of myself, a part of HBB for eons, whatever that means. Mr. Judge was a part of HBB for eons. That's the statement. And she says that he was the only other direct messenger from the Lodge of Masters. Well, when Mr. Judge passed, the theosophists at the time decided, well, who's the next successor? And really, Mr. Judge's writings were that there should be no authority, no worldwide authority over all of theosophy, but local centers that are autonomous but working in harmony. And he compared it to the way Freemasonry works. There's no one world Freemasonry. He talked about that. So his expectation, his ideas, what he put in writing was that theosophy should be each theosophical center should be autonomous, which is exactly how it is in the ULT today. But this successorship craze started working even before he died. And the Theosophical Society split, and it split again. And there was the Theosophical Society in America, and there was the Theosophical Society in Adyar. And here's the problem. This is the difference between that and the ULT. Whenever we see an old TV show or movie and there's a locomotive train pulling, say, 50 cars, and that locomotive, it's the old kind that's blowing smoke and they're feeding coal into it, you never see on TV two front engines pulling 100 cars. You only see the one front engine pulling 50 cars. And the reason for that is because it's mechanical energy. It's physical plane stuff. If they hook up two locomotives to each other, they work against each other and they can't pull twice as much. So this energy between the two locomotives kind of works against each other, and it takes more energy to pull less than what they could pull individually. So that is... Now, on the other hand, today, we can see locomotives that are two and three hooked up together. One could pull 100, but two can pull 300 cars. And the reason for that is because the locomotives, the source of the energy is no longer, it's not mechanical energy. It's electromagnetic energy. And the electromagnetic energy that powers the motor is one. And the motors, because they're being fed by one source of energy, they operate in perfect harmony so that two locomotives hooked together can pull synergistically more than individually. Now, in the sense of spreading broadcast the teachings of theosophy, if we're talking about organizations that are positioning themselves for power, or people in organizations who are more interested in politics than in the teachings, then the power is being diffused. But as we said, the ULT is part of a movement, is part of a movement of thought. And we associate ourselves with that movement of thought without regard to these external issues. And that is what gives the theosophical movement the power. It's not the money. It's not how many buildings are there. It's definitely not how many people are theosophists today. Mr. Judge himself said, "Give me 500 earnest theosophists, 500 sincere students of the philosophy, all focused on one, and I will change the world." And indeed, the world has been greatly affected by the theosophical movement in this past century. Now, Why was it necessary for the ULT to be established? There were successorship issues. There were politics going on. Also, once the society was broken up into individual societies, it was determined by the leaders of these societies, these self-proclaimed presidents of the theosophical societies, that HPB really didn't understand it. that the secret doctrine as written by three, HPB and two masters of wisdom, it was determined that they got it wrong. So the Theosophical Society decided to rewrite the secret doctrine and made as many as 40,000 changes to it. So now it's a completely unrecognizable philosophy, uses the same words, but completely different than what was originally presented. And it was geared toward supporting personally the people in power at the time. Now, this is before TV, this is before internet, and the people the world over, they had no idea this was going on. And as people learn about theosophy, they're buying all these books, learning about what theosophy is, which is not what it was. So as the society would grow, as people would join, they would not even know what the teachings of H.P. Blavatsky and Mr. Judge were. Now, here's an example. In the early 1900s, after the passing of Judge and Blavatsky, we're years into the future, and so this charge, this vibration or this vitality that the movement had, well, when the founders died, there was perhaps some kind of a lessening cycle. And the leaders at the time really recognized, there's something we need to do about this membership. And they decided, well, we are going to pick out who the next world savior is going to be. And we're going to figure it out psychically. And we're going to take this individual, we're going to make him a world savior. And this will attract all sorts of people to start joining the movement again. Now, what they did by doing this is precisely the opposite of the teachings of theosophy. Precisely. Our teachings simply are our being humanity. They are the teachings that are the birthright of all human beings, that each is responsible for one's self, that each is responsible for everything and everyone around us to contribute to the whole, that the human being is not born inherently sinful, but he is born inherently perfectible, and it is the human being's responsibility to seize that, to work that, and find out the path of his own evolution, not for himself, but in service to others. And if he does, nature and nature's laws will recognize that and will make obeisance, and he will grow from it if he's doing it with the right motive, with the right reasons. But as we said, now the Theosophical Society comes out with this savior of humanity, which is precisely the opposite of what the teachings are. But so that's one of many, many schemes, let alone all the books that were written during the early 1900s, the teens and the 20s. If you wrote a theosophical book, or if you wrote any book, and put the word theosophy as part of the title, you made a lot of money on that. It didn't really matter whether it was true or not, but you made a lot of money. And that was what was going on. Well, meanwhile, there were students of theosophy, students of Madame Blavatsky and Mr. Judge, all over the world, who were, some we would imagine, becoming very despondent, some divorcing themselves from the movement, some perhaps just waiting and watching for the opportunity to present itself. And at a certain time, when the Theosophical Society, the current president, who seized succession, who declared that she was the successor appointed so by Mr. Judge in papers found in his office, and people believed it, including Mr. Crosby, who had his own position in the Theosophical Society up in New England, and this was said, and it was the next step that was taken by the Theosophical Society. Now, 30 years later, after all the problems happened, people who supported her and who were in Mr. Judge's office at the time, in writing, they admitted it was all a lie. She was never appointed as a successor by Mr. Judge, but that's what was believed. And she moved the center of mass of the Theosophical Society out to Point Loma. And if you wanted to be a real part of that, you were expected to come out there and join it and give up all your money and all your worldly possessions. And can we use the word cult? Basically, did they turn it into a cult? We don't really know what a cult is, but that sounds like a cult. if you're supposed to turn over all your money to be a part of this. Well, in the midst of this, Mr. Crosby, who had devoted his life to the cause of theosophy, sees what's going on, gets caught up in it, participates, and in short order, once he's out in California, recognizes it for what it is. And walked, not having a penny to his name, he and his wife, went to LA, he got a job at a newspaper, and decided we need to get back to the basics. It was Mr. Crosby, who was a personal pupil of Mr. Judge and of HPB's, who started the United Lodge of Theosophists as a study group in his living room with some folks, a couple of whom had been theosophists, others were neighbors who were interested, and he started this group. So, and we see the effect all over the world. Meanwhile, Mr. Judge was put to the rear. The president in Adyar, it was to her advantage in the other Theosophical Society to not even let that cat out of the bag. And there was a trial held, you know, before he died, and he was convicted of certain ridiculous things. Well, ever since, for years, students of the ULT have had a letter writing campaign on the date of Mr. Judge's passing, writing letters to the president of that society in India, asking that this judge case that convicted him of ridiculous crimes, that it be reopened. They've still got the documents, reopen it posthumously. Let's take a real look to see what's going on. Why? Just to give the recognition of who he was, because in that society for so many decades, he's not even known. Well, what relevance does all this have today? Is the United Lodge even relevant today? Fast forward through TV and the internet, and theosophists all over the world, regardless of how they found themselves affiliated with the movement, are talking, and they know each other, and they get together, and they communicate. And it has not been too many years since folks in India started learning really who HPB is. There's been a bust there because she was a founder, but not her teachings. There are lodges all over America who, if you walked into a lodge, you would learn things maybe related to theosophy, more probably related to other types of psychic things that are not the promulgation of theosophical ideas. However, a lot of that is changing. Mr. Crosby and the Friendly Philosopher wrote that regardless of what we're seeing now, if there is a core group that maintains the teachings, there will be a day when members of that group will go back and start teaching the true philosophy to the Theosophical Society. It's written in his Friendly Philosopher. And that's what's going on. We see that in the ITC today, the International Theosophy Conference. Now, that's an organization, but it's not a theosophical society. It's an organization that has in its set of principles that it adheres to the teachings of HPB and the Masters. And there are many, many people from all over the world and from different organizations who participate in that. It's a challenge. It's a challenge because there's a lot of personalities out there who really are coming to it not really knowing what real theosophy is. And there are those from the ULT, because it was originally, at its inception, it was started by ULT students. And there are students from ULT who attend these as well. So by all means, there is no encouragement that anyone should or shouldn't. But the fact is, it's going on. And students of ULT, when conversations are being held and presentations are being held, it's amazing how open people are to correction, when they hear what the true teachings of theosophy are, because they have no idea. In so many ways, they have no idea. And they're very much open to it. Is theosophy still relevant now? We looked online, and of course, therefore, what we're about to say is true because we checked Google on this. But we looked online just to see the idea of how many people call themselves spiritual, but not religious. And we found this Pew Research that broke it down, but essentially from the age of 18 to 65, there were three different groups. One was 35%, 20, but basically it was about a third of all the people who were polled said, I consider myself a spiritual person, but I'm not religious. Now, over 65, it was only 7% of the people. So I guess the closer we get to death, the more religious we become. I don't know. But the point, is the ULT still relevant? Well, if there are a lot of young folks today who don't even know the name of whoever their local pastor or priest or rabbi might or might not be, because they've never been to church, the mosque, or the synagogue. So where are they going to get these ideas? Through the 1970s into the 1980s, probably everyone sitting here is well aware of the New Age movement, which was a cyclical response in the last 25 years of every century to the spiritual impulse that's given to the West. And the New Age movement in the 70s put out a lot of these theosophical ideas that were unknown to most people. But of course, they were put out by so many authors, and the challenge was to separate the wheat from the chaff. That's one thing that theosophy is able to do for people who come in having heard these ideas, not knowing how to discern the wheat from the chaff. Talk to any professor of religion, a secular profession of religion, not a theologian or one who's specifically Jewish, but a secular professor of religion. And if he's worthy of his title, he knows, and he'll teach a class on how the New Age movement is the product of Madame Blavatsky. Or conversely, Madame Blavatsky is recognized to be the grandmother of the New Age movement. How interesting is that? So, and if there are so many people in search, it was a big movement in the 70s and 80s and even the 90s. Is the ULT still relevant to that? Well, if the theosophical movement is the karma of HPB and Mr. Judge, and if the New Age movement is the effect of the theosophical movement of the last century, then is it not the karma of theosophists today to simply help those who are seeking and asking to help them understand the true philosophy when they come in with questions? We're told in one letter that was published by the great master, great master's letter, the doctrine we promulgate, being the only true one, must, supported by such evidence as we are preparing to give, be ultimately triumphant, like every other truth. Yet it is absolutely necessary to inculcate it gradually, enforcing its theories, unimpeachable facts for those who know, with direct inference deduced and corroborated by the evidence furnished by modern exact science. He says the theosophical movement was chosen as the cornerstone, the foundation of the future religions of humanity. And for that to be successful as a movement, it's so necessary for the ULT to maintain an impersonal attitude toward things, to make our efforts in the ULT not because of opportunity for personal gain, not contribute to the movement expecting something in reward, but simply to do it because it's there to be done without any expectation of personal gain from it. If we continue the movement in an impersonal way, we will contribute to the success of the movement, and we have to be careful because the personality will recreate organizations and hierarchies and presidents and elected officials that have been proven to be the death knell of the movement if given power. So that's our talk for today. You're certainly welcome to stay for a while after and just in fellowship to discuss, investigate ideas on some of the mission and the future of the United Lodge of Theosophists. Thank you.
I know, I had to hold the finger out.
Yeah.
Hey, buddy.